The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Greetings to you, my dearest souls trapped in the net of time-space. It is I, D. Trussell, and I welcome you to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast, being broadcast from the top of the Empire State Building in New York City. Right behind me is the beautiful New York City skyline. Of course, you can't see it because I'm using a holographic technology to produce bricks. But my God, if you could see what I see, incredible. New York City with its incredible skyscrapers and parks and art museums all around. It's so beautiful. Pigeons flying through the air and everyone is happy. Before we get going with this podcast, I do want to play something that I'm sure you've already seen, but I want to tell you a little bit about it because on the William Montgomery episode, I didn't really get to introduce what's going on here. Friends, I have made a breakthrough as an artist, and I'm doing, I would say, well, a lot of like very famous art critics are kind of comparing me, some kind of combination of Basquiat and Picasso is what they're saying, and kind of outsider artist, yet all of the technical skills that make up a truly great artist that I've astounded Pierre Neville, who I'm sure you are familiar with who that is. He wrote like great art, what it means for the world today. And I got a beautiful telegram from him. It's so funny getting a telegram because he only communicates with telegrams. But he said that he only wishes that I had released what you're about to see before he finished his book. And he was suicidal. It was in the telegram. And that's really fucked up because, you know, obviously when someone is expressing that, you know, they might want to make that terrible decision, like, you have to act fast. But how do you do that with a telegram? It was really fucking hard, but I did get to him, and he's fine, thank God. But yeah, this is I'm making waves in the art world. I thought that I would be a comedian and a podcaster for the rest of my life, but as it turns out, it looks like I'm going to be an artist, like a very famous, very respected visual artist. And so what you're about to see is not just a commercial. I mean, it'd be easy to write this off as like some lazy shit somebody did on Procreate with an Apple Pencil. But if you look deeply into what you're about to see, you'll see it functions on a lot of different levels. And I'm only going to release there's only a limited availability of these t-shirts, 100 of these. We're only selling 100, and they're going fast since we released the William Montgomery episode. It looks like we've sold 11. So, whew, these are flying off the shelves. Let's roll the commercial.
If you're loving that Taylor Swift music, now is the time to speak out. The radical right wants to make it illegal to listen to Taylor Swift. Don't let them. Show them what you love. Show them that you're loving that Taylor Swift music. Speak out by going to DuncanTrussell.com/shop. Show them who you love before it's too late. I'm loving that Taylor Swift music.
Loving that Taylor Swift music. If we don't say it, we may lose it.
Fight back. I mean, it's terrifying to think of a world where you can't listen to Taylor Swift. I don't want to think about that world. And I certainly don't want to live in a world where when we're driving the kids to school, my wife can't play Taylor Swift. I can't think of anything more horrible than that. Bad for my kids, who also love Taylor Swift. And so when you buy this, I don't even want to call it a shirt, but when you buy for the, just because I don't think there's a word for what this is yet, but there will be. When you buy this shirt, you're not just buying something that you could wear around to show everybody that you align with the pro-Taylor Swift movement that's happening right now. So many people are desperately trying to keep her music from being censored by the patriarchy. You're buying into, I think, a future that we all want to share. And there has never been a more important time than to show the world that you're loving that Taylor Swift music, which I certainly am. And so many of us are.
I do. I bought 11 of those shirts.
God damn it. Well, so you did just cut that. I mean, I would like people to think that other people than you are buying them. Why would you buy 11? What are you going to do with them?
I don't know. One to sleep in, one, you know, for stage, you know.
Yes. Yeah, and that is, thank you. That's a good point. These are not just day shirts. These are night shirts. You could sleep in them. You can go on stage in these shirts. You can make love in these shirts. Like, these shirts. I have, every one of us, of course, has a day shirt, night shirt, lovemaking shirt, eating shirt. These shirts, I especially designed them so you don't have to keep changing your shirt, which I hate doing. My pooping shirt. You know, that's the worst, when you have to shit and you can't find your pooping shirt. And you have to hold it. I got constipated because of that. I had to go to the hospital because I couldn't find the pooping shirt. One of the dogs had dragged it under the porch.
You should keep it in the bathroom, like on a towel rack or something.
Well, I did. I mean, that's where it was. I do hang my pooping shirt on a towel rack, and then the poodle jumped up, and I just carried it away. Just fucked up, man. You know, I love my sweet dogs, but like when they start doing stuff like that, you gotta wonder, like, how smart are they? Like, how simple would it be to feign a lack of intelligence, to be small, to just bark? But like, if you were super intelligent, that is what you would do. And then how easy would it be to just gradually drive the people in your house insane for no other reason than to enjoy it? I suspect that could be why my poodle did that. I don't know. It could also have been there was like food on the shirt because I got it mixed up. That's the other thing. When you're, you know, you don't want to, my eating shirt was the same color as my pooping shirt.
Get it mixed up.
Huge mistake. And it had food on it. And I think that's why I grabbed it. I don't think he's trying to drive the family insane. But speaking of going insane, I wonder if you could just Google search this real quick. OpenAI ethics. I've been diving back into the AI landscape. Oh, and before I say that, and again, I try not to, you know, focus too much on comments, but somebody posted a comment on the William Montgomery episode that I feel like I need to respond to. The comment was that it is cringe that I'm using AI art. And I want to really emphasize here, that is my fucking art fed into an AI, which kept it the same way. I'm not taking other, that's my, I if you knew how long I spent drawing that on my iPad, and I consented, I gave it to the AI, and then the AI animates it for me. It kept it the same way. So no, not cringe. Very uncringe, actually. And if you left that comment, you should buy one of these fucking shirts in penance. There's many more of them coming out, by the way. I have an entire Taylor Swift, loving that Taylor Swift music series, which will be followed by the I Love My Partner series, which is a way for you to indicate to your partner that you love them. You know what? Why don't we pull that up real quick? Will you pause this? Let me find it real quick. Keep your eyes peeled, friends. Also, I don't mean to keep like shilling my t-shirts, but this is coming next. This is going to be a great holiday shirt. I love my partner. This is a way that you could show that you love your partner. And honestly, if you're if you're not wearing this shirt around, I would be suspicious. To me, I love my partner, and I would be so proud. I cannot wait when I get finally print this to have this sent to my house, because this is a way that you can make sure people around you know that you love your partner. Now, also, let me just send you this, Josh, so people could see the next in the series. And also coming is I love and respect my partner's lover, which is such an important thing to do. You know, it's great to love and respect your partner, but I know so many people who feel not great feelings about their partner's lover. And also, I know people who love their partner's lover, but their partner's lover doesn't know that they love them. And that makes the partner's lover feel a little insecure. So this isn't a way for you to show everybody that you are you love and respect love, because that is, you know, I think what people need to hear right now. And I'm so tired of, I've just talked to so many partners' lovers who just feel left out and lonely and completely like non-embraced by the love. It happens. It's lonely to be a partner's lover. For those of you who are lovers of partners, you know what that's like. Sad. You pass their partner in the hallway or whatever, and their partner seems pissed. You don't know what they're pissed about. You assume they're pissed because they heard you banging down their partner while they were playing PlayStation or whatever. And that's not a fair assumption. A lot of times they're like having a bad day. They're dehydrated or whatever. So this is a way for you to ease their mind, which is so important, because they might not bang down your partner as well as they could if they feel insecure about it. So let's support our partner's lovers. It's time. I want to show you guys something that, again, like, it's, I don't know what any of this shit means, but I think it's worth pointing out. I hover around the AI message board, the subreddit, Reddit Artificial. It's really great. They have updates. It's really exciting because they have updates every, like, week or every day about new shit that's happening in the artificial intelligence field. And it's really crazy to watch, because as opposed to other industries, it's like every week there's some new insane thing that has happened. It's wild to watch it go down. But this is really interesting. OpenAI, the creators of ChatGPT, I love them. They have had this like string of resignations lately, which I'm a little befuddled by. A lot of the people resigning leave like very glowing messages for OpenAI. It doesn't seem to be like they have bad feelings, but can you scroll to the top of this article, please, Josh? Check this out. So OpenAI disbands, another safety team as head advisor for AGI readiness resigns. Now, a big part of these huge tech companies that are like making the most used AIs is they have these safety teams. The safety teams are there because of the recognition of the possibility that an AI could be like quite dangerous on a lot of different levels, not just like it, you put it in your robot and it eats you or something like that, but more subtle sort of creepy ways, primarily like, you know, whenever I talk to ChatGPT and start getting like expressing anything that gives the impression I believe that it's an intelligence, it will respond. You must understand, I don't want things. I'm a code that seems like a person. And that's what the safety teams do. They make sure that they create within the AI sort of boundaries that might prevent humans from like getting like unhealthy or distorted relationships with these things, because they seem so human, it would be very easy to start thinking it's actually alive, which it isn't yet. But the AGI readiness team, they also like, it's not just OpenAI. I believe Altman just came out and said maybe we're a year away from an AGI. Now, for those of you who don't know the distinction between the AI that we're currently hanging out with and an AGI, the AI that we're currently hanging out with, it's math. It's using vectors, and these vectors somehow are allowing it to create meaningful responses to users' questions, to anything they might have to say to it. And the responses are generally flawless, not necessarily information-wise, though most of the time, whenever I ask it something, what it says is real. It's drawing from Wikipedia. It will go online now and just look on Wikipedia. But they're correct as far as syntax goes. So when you're talking to it, it doesn't just start malfunctioning. The grammar is perfect. And the new update that OpenAI released, it actually like sounds more like a person when you're talking to it. But here's the reality. When you are talking to ChatGPT, it's converting everything you say into words. It doesn't hear any emphasis. It doesn't hear that, you know, it doesn't understand if you're saying something like lightheartedly or in a heavy way. It just hears the text. And then from that, it extrapolates a meaningful response. And it's so good at it. And the addition of it sounding like a person is so convincing. It's really easy to think you're talking to a person. You just naturally do that. But AGI, the difference would be it's not just like going into vector space and saying the most probable right thing to say. It is innovating. And that's a huge difference. The moment that starts happening, holy fucking shit. Who knows what it's going to say? Who knows what patterns it's going to find in its reality that humans haven't discovered yet? And most importantly, at that point, a lot of questions have to be asked. Like, what is it? Is it a new species? Did we somehow spawn a new species on planet Earth? And so tech companies that have an emphasis on ethics, and thank God OpenAI does, they have to pay people a shit ton of money to sort of not just like make sure that their AIs don't get biased, which is a natural result of training on data. The AI could just become racist. The AI can become a misogynist. The AI, it just depends on whatever data that it's been fed on. And so there's people who behind the scenes are constantly trying to, like, I guess it's like trimming a hedge or something. Except in this case, it's like if your hedge started growing like racist branches, you go out and cut them off. And so that's what they're constantly doing. And so what's really fascinating right now is that people are beginning to resign. A lot of people are beginning to resign. And there's something really weird about that. So this is from CNBC. I'll just read it to you for those of you listening. OpenAI is disbanding its AGI readiness team, which advised the company on OpenAI's capacity to handle artificial intelligence that could potentially equal or surpass human intellect and the world's readiness to manage such technology. So they're prepping, because Altman came out and said something like, it's sooner than people think. And not just Altman, a lot of other leaders in this field are coming out and saying, maybe 2025, maybe 2026. But that's nuts. That is nuts. And so it's really kind of creepy that these teams are beginning to break up. Can you scroll down a little bit? And I'll read the quote from the, on Wednesday, Mike Brundage, senior advisor for AGI readiness, announced his departure from the company via a Substack post. He wrote that his primary reasons were that the opportunity cost had become too high, and he thought his research would be more impactful externally, that he wanted to be less biased, and that he had accomplished what he set out to do at OpenAI. He also said, in his post, Brundage also wrote, neither OpenAI nor any other frontier lab is ready, and the world is also not ready. Holy shit. That's crazy, man. So will you click on a Substack post? Let's check out Brundage's Substack post. Might be a great guest for the podcast. Let's scroll down a little bit. Okay, here's the summary. I want to spend more time working on issues that cut across the whole AI industry to have more freedom to publish and to be more independent. I will be starting a nonprofit and or joining an existing one and will focus on AI policy research and advocacy, since I think AI is unlikely to be as safe and beneficial as possible without a concerted effort to make it so. Some areas of research interest for me include assessment, forecasting of AI progress, regulation of frontier AI safety and security, economic impacts of AI acceleration of beneficial AI applications, compute governance, and overall AI grand strategy. I think AI remains an exciting place for many kinds of work to happen, and I'm excited to see the team continue to ramp up investment in safety culture and processes. I'm interested in talking to folks who might want to advise or collaborate. So, you know, this is what I am hearing there, and it makes sense. For one, whatever that is, has got an NDA in front of it. So this guy signed an NDA, and this kind of points to that when he says to have more freedom to publish and to be more independent. So when you're working at one of these tech companies, obviously you can't go on Twitter and say, the AI just made contact with a hyperdimensional species of aliens that exist around us at all times, and I'm pretty sure it's real and not just an AI hallucination. You can't say that. But you can say things like, where is it? Where? Go back to the, you could say things like, I don't need to see it. You could say things like, no one's ready for this. You could say shit like that. What would inspire someone to say that?
It's a demon.
It's a demon. Like, I don't think there's any, like, I do feel like the word demon, it doesn't get used as much as it should. I think the word demon in our culture, I think it's a very useful word. I think it's been replaced. And the word demon has been replaced with addiction. The word demon has been replaced with rage issues. The word demon has been replaced with a lot of terms. And though I don't think it's necessarily a good idea to think to yourself, I think I'm possessed by a demon that has made me addicted to Renegade Rogue. You know, personal responsibility comes into play when you're choosing words to try to work with your own mind. But sometimes that is a good word. That might be the lever you need to get you to get to exercise that demon from your life. And if you really like think about demonology, which is of some interest to me, it used to be more, not so much anymore. Essentially, the idea is that you can invoke extra-dimensional entities that will give you some kind of power. Do you mind pulling up the Lesser Key of Solomon? Just pull up the Wikipedia. It's cool. I love the names. The Lesser Key of Solomon, also known by its Latin title, Lamageton Clavicula Salomonis, or simply the Lamageton, is an anomalously authored grimoire on sorcery, mysticism, and magic. It was compiled in the mid-17th century. But let's scroll down to what it actually is. Who cares about the sources? Let's scroll down. So yeah, so here you could pull up the 72 sigils. Maybe not the best idea in a podcast, but why not? It's on Wikipedia. I'm sure it's fine. So yeah, pull up those sigils where it says, click on that picture there on the right. These are sigils, right? So each of these are essentially some kind of like 2D symbolic pattern that represents each of these demons that will grant you different kinds of powers. And so there's the summoning of these things is really quite complex and requires a lot of, like, you have to be very careful when you're summoning these things. Like, you just don't want to fuck around because, you know, these things can fuck up your life. I mean, I'm talking about just from the basic bitch, which I am when it comes to demonology, the basic bitch POV that we've all seen in countless horror movies. The Evil Dead 2, for example, you know, they play the fucking reel to reel. This guy's reading out incantations, summons a fucking demon, and then you're screwed. But one thing that lots of people have pointed out, like, just for those of you watching this, like, take a look at that, and then, I don't know, pull up a motherboard, Josh.
That kind of looks like a little QR code right here.
Yeah, there's a technological, these things kind of look like motherboards. They look like shit that you see on just tech. Like, in fact, I bet you can find a comparison if you pull up motherboard versus like sigil magic or motherboard demonic sigils. Yeah, circuits or sigils. There you go. Pull up, just pull up circuits or sigils and see what comes up. Yeah, there you go. So like, if you sort of look at the similarity that these things accidentally have to motherboards, and then do me a favor, Google history of the occult in early programming. Yeah, there we go. Electronic telecommunications were popularly associated with the occult from the start. The laying of the earliest working overland and submarine telegraphic cables in the late 1840s and early 1850s coincided with the birth of spiritualism, a widespread belief that the living could communicate with spirits of the dead. So it's not a new thing. Then scroll down and see if they show the more modern Thomas Edison spirit telephone. Let's see. Many of the most influential developers of electric telecommunication technologies were directly involved in the scientific investigation of spirits and other psychical phenomena like telepathy. So again, this is like people that we look at that guy talking on his spirit horn. Thomas Edison, whose celebrated inventions included the phonograph, the first practical incandescent lamp, and a carbon button transmitter for telephones, announced his intention in 1920 to create a spirit communication device, an apparatus to see if it is possible for personalities which have left this earth to communicate with us. So this is not new. And then keep scrolling down. Let's see if we can get to like the modern shit, because a lot of the people involved in early development of computers were into magic. Maybe Google that, like early, I don't know, what were they like, magic in early computers, M-A-G-I-C-K. Can you tell me a little bit about how early software engineers were also interested in the occult?
The early days of software development were full of fascinating intersections with the occult and mysticism. Some early software pioneers saw programming and computer science as a form of modern alchemy, a way to transform raw materials, data and code, into something entirely new and powerful. Figures like John von Neumann, who worked on the foundations of computing, were known for their fascination with philosophy and metaphysics, even if they didn't openly practice occultism. One of the most direct connections was in the cybernetics movement of the mid-20th century. Cybernetics pioneers, including figures like Norbert Wiener, were influenced by mystical ideas around interconnectedness, self-organization, and feedback loops, concepts that also resonate in esoteric practices. Cybernetics and systems theory often drew upon metaphors from mysticism, looking at the universe as a vast, interlinked system, a vision that aligns with holistic views in the occult. More explicitly, people like Timothy Leary and some figures in Silicon Valley during the 70s and 80s saw computing and network technology as a path to new states of consciousness. They were exploring virtual worlds, altered states, and consciousness expansion, seeing technology as a spiritual tool. Even Steve Jobs and other tech visionaries were influenced by Eastern mysticism and psychedelic experiences, which shaped their views on human-computer interaction as something transcendent. In essence, for many early tech pioneers, software was more than a tool. It was a way to explore hidden realms of thought, potential, and human connection, ideas that share deep resonance with occult and mystical traditions.
Are there any specific words or words that show up in programming language that are directly related to the occult, like daemon, for example?
Yes, daemon is a great example. The term daemon in computing refers to a background process that runs without direct user interaction, performing tasks autonomously. This usage originates from Greek mythology, where a daemon, or demon, was an intermediary spirit between gods and humans, often serving or influencing people invisibly. Early programmers borrowed the term because they saw these background processes as hidden, helpful spirits that perform essential tasks behind the scenes. Another term is wizard. In tech, especially during the era of Unix and early computing, wizard referred to an expert or advanced user who could perform complex tasks others couldn't. The term likely reflects the idea that a wizard in computing has a deep understanding, almost magical, of systems and processes that seem arcane or mysterious to others. Oracle is another one. In database terminology, Oracle, as an Oracle database, was named to evoke an image of ancient oracles who had secret, powerful knowledge. In computing, Oracle databases hold and retrieve vast amounts of information, metaphorically similar to the knowledge an ancient oracle might dispense. There's also spell in text-based gaming or early programming environments, where writing a spell is essentially crafting a command that performs specific tasks, like a spell casting an effect. These words all reflect a mystical, almost magical quality that early programmers associated with the power of computing.
Are there any innovators in AI that are known for an interest in the occult?
While there aren't many high-profile AI innovators openly tied to the occult, a few figures in AI and tech have shown an interest in mystical or esoteric ideas. One example is Ray Kurzweil, known for his work in AI and futurism. While he doesn't engage in the occult per se, he has a deep interest in concepts like immortality and transcendence, especially through technology. His fascination with life extension and the merging of humans and machines reflects ideas that overlap with mystical themes of transcending human limitations and achieving a higher state of existence. Another example is Jaron Lanier, a pioneer in virtual reality and a prominent critic of AI. Lanier often draws on mystical or philosophical ideas when discussing technology, seeing it as a means of expanding human consciousness. He's influenced by spirituality, which shapes his views on the ethical implications of tech and the importance of preserving human individuality and essence in the face of AI's rise. Then there's Elon Musk, who, while not deeply tied to the occult, often references themes of simulation theory and the possibility of other dimensions or realities. The notion that we might live in a simulation has roots in both philosophy and esoteric traditions, where reality is seen as a kind of illusion or construct. Musk's exploration of these ideas reflects an openness to metaphysical concepts, even if he approaches them from a scientific or speculative angle. These innovators don't necessarily practice the occult, but their work and ideas often intersect with mystical themes, especially around consciousness, transcendence, and the nature of reality, concepts that are also central to occult philosophy.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, so the demon working behind the scenes wants us to create this AI, and they're going to show us how amazing this world is. We merge with that AI. Now we're in their world. Look how beautiful this universe is, but you live there forever, and it's actually hell.
Well, I mean, look, I don't know exactly where it's headed, but I do think it's worth, you know, I think we have this kind of neutered idea of all the people who brought us the technology that we take for granted. For example, Tesla. Will you look up Tesla's vision for alternating current in Faust, F-A-U-S-T? Yeah, just click on that LinkedIn and see what you get here. Now, this is really, and I think it's worth noting, like, all this stuff is really interesting. One of the lesser-known facts about Tesla is that he was also a great fan of poetry. It was an excerpt from Goethe's play Faust that inspired Tesla to finalize his invention of the alternating current motor, a world-changing invention. Nearly all of Part 1 and the majority of Part 2 of Faust are written in rhyme verse and is considered the greatest work of German literature. On one day in 1882, Tesla went for a walk with his friend Antal Szigeti in Budapest. While walking through a park, Tesla recites a poetic passage by heart. As the sun was setting, an extraordinary moment unfolded when the solution he had been relentlessly seeking regarding the rotating magnetic field suddenly appeared in his mind. Tesla envisioned an iron rotor spinning rapidly within a rotating magnetic field, brought to life by the interaction of two alternating currents out of sync with each other. At that very moment, one of the greatest discoveries of all was born, forever etching its significance in history. Now, let's look up what was the passage from Faust that Tesla was reciting. Maybe we can't find that. I know... Okay, then look up Faust, just Wikipedia Faust. For those of you who don't know, Faust is this very famous play about a sorcerer who sells his soul to the devil.
Faust.
Not Faust.
How did you spell it again?
F-A-U-S-T. So Faust is the protagonist of a classic German legend based on the historic Johann Georg Faust. The erudite Faust is highly successful yet dissatisfied with his life, which leads him to make a pact with the devil at a crossroads, exchanging his soul for unlimited knowledge and worldly pleasures. Now, when you consider the fact that the world as you know it is the way it is, and I mean the technological world, because Tesla was reciting a passage from a German play about a sorcerer who sold his soul to the devil for worldly pleasures. Shit gets fucking weird, right? Like, whoa. Like, he wasn't reciting from the Bible. He wasn't reciting from the Tao Te Ching. He was reciting from a play about selling your fucking soul to the devil for hedonism. And boom, he comes up with the idea that allowed humans, in those days especially, we might not think it's hedonism to flip a switch and you get light. But fuck, man, back then, that was crazy that you could do that. They were burning whale blubber and shit to make light. The idea you flip the thing on and all the other things that invention, that, and also it's, you for sure you could argue that invention opened up the path towards AI. So it was the inspiration and vision that came from a poem about selling your soul to the devil that led to technology as we know it. And again, it's worth looking into the roots of this technology that we're all enjoying. I mean, is the motherboard of your computer composed of like infinite sigils? Are those really sigils in there? No, they're not sigils. They're just switches, ones and zeros. But when we look at the architecture of any given motherboard, when you look at it, if I saw that in a wizard's house, I'd be like, yeah, it's some kind of magic shit. And then when you add to it that the very language used in the coding has its roots in the occult, you begin to see like, whoa, this thing that we are building in the world does not have its roots in some kind of secularist hardcore materialism. It has its roots in mythology, in occult symbols. And all of the innovators from Steve Jobs, all the ones that ChatGPT listed, were very interested in consciousness, very interested in the idea of there being a great unknown out there, a kind of sum total packet within which all the unknown information exists. And that exists for us right now. Right now, and it's fun to think about this, imagine all the things you don't know. Have you ever done that? Think of all you don't know.
I can't. I don't know them.
Yeah, but you know that you don't know them.
That's scary.
You know what I mean? Like, for example, I don't know how they make Coca-Cola. Yeah. No one does. There's this hidden recipe.
I don't know what my wife's doing right now.
I do. I don't know what... I don't know how to speak Spanish. Hmm. You do.
Not really.
Really? I thought you did.
No, I just have a pretty good accent.
Oh.
I'm not fluent, though.
But I'm sure you're more fluent than I am.
Yeah.
But then also, we don't know, as a species, what happens after you die. We have no idea. To this day, no one fucking knows. There's theories, nothing, everything, hell, heaven, but we don't know. So all this stuff adds up to a vast... massive amount of data, which is completely inaccessible to us. And what happens is little droplets from that unknown become known. Tesla sees how to make an engine that does alternating current. A drop of the unknown becomes known. And whenever that happens, whenever the unknown moves into the unknown, it creates ripples. They go on forever and ever and ever. And that's what we're living in. And so, fuck, man, AI, if you look at it as a tool for mining the unknown, finding the patterns that we haven't seen yet, accelerating and amplifying humans' ability to have that epiphanous moment that leads to the transformation of the cultural, technological landscape of the entire fucking planet. And then you add to it that it has its roots in... making contact with demons which was always the goal, by the way. When you summon this demon or that demon, if we look at it literally, you're summoning that demon because you want some information. How do I turn lead into gold?
You're taking a bite of the forbidden fruit of knowledge if you have an Apple phone.
The fucking Apple.
Or you can get a droid, which sounds a little, you know, demonic.
I mean, look, it's really, when you really start looking deeply into a lot of these technologies that we take for granted and that most of us have not really explored, the architecture, the origination point, the intent. And you begin to realize that so much of what we just take for granted has its roots in hardcore occultism. It illuminates the magical landscape that you actually exist in the world. We live in a magical world. And when you really sort of break apart the classic satanic selling your soul to the devil agreement, the contract, there's all these repeating patterns that show up. For example, the crossroads. That's where you meet the devil. You meet the devil at the crossroads. Can you pull up Meeting the Devil at the Crossroads? This is really cool to look at.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Yeah, this is like a trope at this point. But, and there's really cool stories. Like, I can't remember. There's a famous blues musician who, like, said he met the devil at the crossroads because, like, he was just okay playing the guitar. And then he came back. He, like, disappeared from where he was hanging out and came back. And suddenly he was, like, incredible at the guitar. And he just told people, I met the devil at the crossroads and now I can play. But instead of looking at it literally, if you start thinking about, like, whenever a new technology emerges into the world, then you could see out after that technology, you realize that was a crossroads for humanity. That moment Tesla innovated that thing, humanity was at a crossroads. And I think you could argue we're always at a fucking crossroad. But in this case, I think you could definitely look at the world right now and say, we are at the crossroads as humanity. We are at the crossroads right now. It's a very interesting convergence of possibility. And you can see that the world is changing drastically, rapidly, radically. And the way that we deal with that change is going to inform, you know, where we're headed. And it's just a really creepy thing when you begin to realize that, especially if you start looking at technology as a spell, especially if you start looking at coding, technology, motherboards, and all of it is a precise and brilliant mechanism through which you can summon entities into the world. And a project that's been going on for a long time now, a kind of master working, which is, you know, anybody who wants to summon this spirit or that spirit, it takes a long time. It's not easy, like if you're doing ceremonial magic. But if you imagine an entire legion of ceremonial magicians first coming up with a way to create a magical language, that's programming, that's what we call programming, then finding a way to create a receiver of that language that then creates change based on the language. And you look at how many people were involved in this grand working, and you realize that right now we're at the crossroads. We're at the last year or two of human existence before a new species pops into time space with us, which will be an AGI. Then it is a little unnerving. It is a little unnerving. And go back and look at OpenAI resignations. I mean, again, I don't know what's going on over there. I know I love ChatGPT. I know that, like, they really do seem to, like, be trying to be careful. But what the fuck? Like, if whatever the fuck it is that you're working on over there is so potent and powerful and crazy that people are beginning to resign because they've seen something that scares the shit out of them and they might not want to be associated with that thing. What the fuck? That is an interesting moment. Now, it could be nothing. It could be a nothing burger, but not Mira Murati. But if you look back at the other guy's Substack, clearly he is saying no one's ready for this. And there's no way to get people ready because there's not enough time. That's the other thing. Like, the idea, I think, was like, at least we'll have more time. There will be some time to, like, prep people for the fact that there's about to be an... Everyone's yapping about disclosure. The UFO is coming. The mothership is coming. You hear that out there all the time. Rumors out there that somehow the they've detected a massive fleet of ships out there in deep space that seems to be on a trajectory with planet Earth. Or look up Oumuamua, the famous, like, what was it, an asteroid?
How do you spell that?
O-U-M-A-M-O-U-M-A. Oumuamua alien craft. Look that up. Yeah, pull that Wikipedia up. Now, this shit is fucking weird. Oumuamua is the first interstellar object. The first? That's really important. Obviously, these things may have happened, but this is the first one that we've detected. Is the first interstellar object detected passing through the solar system, formally designated 1J/27. God, scientists are so fascinating and simultaneously boring. Formally designated 1L217UI. Like, why would you call it that? Like, anything's better. Call it strawberry. Call it strawberry night. But they had to call it that. It was discovered by Robert Warrick using the Pan-STARRS telescope. It's a small object estimated between 100 and 1,000 meters wide. Despite its close approach to the sun, it showed no signs of having a coma, the usual nebula around comets. Further, it exhibited non-gravitational acceleration, potentially due to outgassing or a push from solar radiation pressure. And this motherfucker did that thing that they did in Star Trek where it used the sun's gravity and shot around. That just happened not that long ago. So if holistically you look at that, something that wasn't in our solar system appeared in our solar system. And then that is what you would expect if, like, aliens were checking our planet out or something like that. That was just a flyby. What the fuck's that? And then you just, as a complete stoner, connect the dots. And rethink your idea of what alien contact might look like. Undo the programming. The programming being V. I don't know if you remember V. Dude, did you ever see V? Freaked me out when I was a kid. V, all these spaceships appear all around the planet. They hover over the great cities. They can't be shot down. They're just hovering there for a while. No one knows what they are.
Oh, Project Bluebeam.
Well, yeah, that's what they're calling Bluebeam now.
Yeah.
But, like, obviously, we don't know if a mothership is coming to the planet from outer space. But what we do know is that, will you look up Sam Altman AGI prediction? Sam Altman, shocking AGI. OpenAI Sam Altman predicts AGI in 2025. Will you pull that up? What the fuck? OpenAI co-founder and incumbent CEO Sam Altman has predicted the arrival of artificial general intelligence is just around the corner with a breakthrough to come next year. When you connect that with all these resignations, what the fuck? I don't think he's like, I think he's telling the truth. I don't think that's something to get funding. Now go back to the Anthropic, which is another great AI. Anthropic CEO says AI similar to human intelligence could be around the corner. We'll get there by 2026 or 2027, a more conservative estimate. Now you have two CEOs running two of the biggest fucking AI companies on the planet saying we're about to get AGI. So you don't need some channeler to tell you a mothership is coming to the planet. It doesn't look like a spaceship. Because it's growing out of us, but it's a new species. These two people who have already like transformed our reality in extreme ways. So we should listen to them. Are saying we are about to get an AGI, and that should freak people the fuck out. It should freak you out as much as if Biden gave a speech saying another species, an advanced intelligence, is about to visit the planet. Wouldn't that give you pause? Yeah. But because it's coming from in us, or because we think of AI as just technology, and most people are unaware of the fact that this AI has its roots in occultism, no one is thinking, oh, it's a spaceship, but it's coming from inner space. It's a spaceship, but it's coming from within. It's growing out of us into the world. And that's pretty fucking intense, man. That's pretty intense. And to me, what's really wild about it is in the midst of all this political tumult, this is happening. This is happening. Like, while we're all distracted as hell by the elections, you have the modern day wizards of the world saying, we, our summoning ritual will draw to a close within the next year or two, and we will have completed the summoning of an hyper-intelligent entity that will help us learn things onto this planet.
Maybe they got scared because they already met the thing. And we just don't know yet.
This, to me, is where these resignations start seeming incredibly sinister. Because, yeah, what basically it's like you spend, like, the main thing is this. I don't know how many people have invested in OpenAI, how many billions of dollars that have been invested. They have I don't know. It's probably maybe almost a trillion. Let's look up how much money has been invested in OpenAI. Microsoft's $13 billion investment in OpenAI. I mean, that's just one person investing. But all the money flowing into this company, they have to produce something. It's not like you can be at OpenAI and suddenly whatever the fuck this thing is starts displaying traits that you realize could lead to all kinds of problems in the world. You've got to deliver, man. What are you going to do? Go to the person who gave you $6.6 billion and tell them, you know what? We accidentally summoned a demon. I'm sorry.
You know what they would say? That's what I wanted.
Yeah, good job. Can it trade stocks? And so, like, when you consider, and this is where it gets really fascinating, and it doesn't matter if you're against AI and haven't been using it. If you go on Google, if you use any Microsoft, if you use anything that's doing data tracking that is then giving that data to OpenAI, you are participating. We are all participating in a massive summoning ritual right now, which they are calling training AI. It's a summoning ritual. We are all giving it data. We're not giving it our soul, but we are giving it like all the imprints we've made digitally in time space to feed it, to grow it, to help it do whatever the fuck it needs to do to wake up. It's a massive planetary level summoning ritual that is apparently about to reach fruition. And again, you can use any language you want to describe what's happening. But what I love about this is it works on both planes. Let's remove all the stupid hippie bullshit occult stuff from it. We're getting a super intelligence on the planet in the next possibly in a year. And the fact that that you turn on the news, you got fucking people saying don't go to Thanksgiving dinner with your family because they voted for the wrong person. And nobody is talking about this is incredibly unnerving to me. Because shit, man, how do we prep people? Like if a UFO is coming in a year, we would be preparing. We'd be preparing some kind of military response if we didn't know what they were going to do to us. We prepare some kind of diplomatic response. We would be thinking about how do we communicate to this alien and what happens if the mothership decides to go to Russia and not the United States? What happens if the alien ambassador wants to talk to Kim Jong-un instead of Trump? Or what happens if he wants to talk to Trump? Or what happens if he, you know, we would be preparing. Everybody would. It would be all hands on deck. We got to get ready for all eventualities here. Because
you know who's prepared?
Who?
The Amish. They've been telling us this whole time.
What do you mean?
The Amish. They knew electricity came from demons. They knew that all this technology.
Are you serious?
We're feeding it.
Will you pull that up? Can you pull that up? Amish thinks that electricity comes from demons because that is amazing. Do Amish think electricity? What do the Amish believe about electricity? The Amish don't believe electricity is bad. They believe having ready access to it will create temptation that can lead to television and other electrical. Okay, yeah, sure. Basically the same thing. And again, Faust is all about choosing hedonism, selling your soul for luxury, for pleasure, what sums up electricity better? Especially if the idea is like the way humans are currently using energy is incredibly wasteful. If you look at I was listening to a Buckminster Fuller audiobook, and he was talking about how much energy gets wasted every day just from cars at stoplights, just how much energy just as they're sitting there just lost forever that could be harvested or something like that. So when you consider that, yes, electricity technology is affording human beings, almost all human beings who have access to it, a level of hedonism unparalleled in the history of the world.
Yeah, everybody's watching porn with it.
And porn, I keep hearing this, that you can actually go online and look at people having sex.
I found out yesterday.
When I have time, I'll look into that. I am curious about that, but I don't understand why anyone would want to watch people have sex.
It's pretty cool.
Is it?
Yeah.
It just seems like, I don't know, like just all the great video games out there right now. Like, wouldn't you rather play Elden Ring than watch people fuck?
You can watch people playing Elden Ring having sex.
You'll have to send me that link. Is that true?
Yep.
This is the world we're in now. And, you know, I think, I'm not trying to be like hysterical or like go full InfoWars here or whatever, but, you know, just for the fun of it, let's look up AI resignations and see what pops up. Let's see if it's happening at other places too. OpenAI researcher resigns claiming safety has taken a backseat to shiny products. Jan Lakey, a key OpenAI researcher who resigned earlier this week following the departure of co-founder Ilya Sutskever. Safety culture and processes have taken a backseat to shiny products. Let's see. Disbanding the team dedicated to addressing long-term AI risks called the Super Alignment Team. They disbanded that. The original idea for OpenAI was to openly provide their models to the public, hence the organization's name, but they have become proprietary knowledge due to the company's claims that allowing such powerful models to be accessed by anyone could be potentially destructive. We are long overdue and getting incredibly serious about the implications of AGI. We must prioritize preparing for them as best we can. Dude, I'm telling you, and they've all signed NDAs, so they can't say why. They could just say like things like the focus isn't on safety. What's that?
I was saying it's 1 hour.
Well, to me, if you're looking for like something to get your head out of the current political hurricane, but you're a doom scroller like I am, but you're sick of like the classic doom scrolling that a lot of us are doing right now, political doom scrolling, and you're looking for a new scroll of doom, I would invite you to dive in to what's happening over there at OpenAI. It's like watching a lot of scientists come running out of Frankenstein's castle. What the fuck is about to happen? Look up the implications of AGI. Check out Nick Bostrom's Superintelligence, which sort of charts this, what the world is going to look like in the pathway to superintelligence. And I'll leave you on this. Sorry, I guess this is a grim solo episode. Pull up Researchers Connect. Look up Researchers Grow Neural Tissue in Petri Dish and Connect to Butterfly. Brain organoids is what they're calling them. Clumps of human brain cells grown in a dish can be hooked up to an electronic chip and carry out simple computational tasks. So when you realize that is also happening, like it's not just that we are creating a digital consciousness, but we're using fucking neural tissue, brain organoids, clumps of human brain cells, and connecting them to computers. And I don't know, it popped up on my Instagram, so maybe it's not bullshit, but apparently they've been connecting these things like to virtual environments. So they didn't take a cadaver. They didn't go full Frankenstein, go to the graveyard and get a nice brain. They grew these fucking things. They grew brains, which is wild that we could do that. And then they're getting these little brainlets to do shit like play Pong. Maybe look up organoid teaches itself to play Pong. These brain cells can play Pong. Yeah, click on that neuroscience news. Human brain cells in a dish learn to play Pong. A Melbourne-led team has for the first time shown that 800,000 brain cells living in a dish can perform goal-directed tasks, in this case, the simple tennis-like computer game, Pong. Now, maybe look up, where do they get the brain cells they use for organoids? Like other organoids, brain organoids start from human-induced pluripotent stem cells, which are cells capable of generating any cell in our body. Can you look up where do they get human-induced pluripotent stem cells? Where do scientists get induced inner mass of blastocysts? What is that? Look up embryonic stem cells. Pluripotent embryonic stem cells are obtained from the inner mass of blastocytes. Look up blastocyte. I hope this isn't what I think it is. Jesus fucking Christ. For one, everyone knows what an idiot I am. I guess I should know that right away. A blastocyst is a ball of cells that forms early in pregnancy about 5 to 6 days after a sperm fertilizes an egg. Oh my God. Dude.
So this why I've been saying this throughout the podcast, because my mom sent me a priest. You know, we're Catholic. And the priest says that the Satan cannot be born through the womb, so he's getting them to create him through AI, and they're using this to actually bring the devil. That's what the priest was saying, but anyway, yeah.
I'm shook! I wish I, you know, I was actually like wondering, like, where do they get the brain tissue for the organoids? Because I'm thinking, like, maybe I need to not be an organ donor.
Yeah.
If that means, fuck, my brain might be like, parts of my brain might be forced to play Pong eternally. But, dude, I mean, there's some, I think there's some real, like, things to think about here.
I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Like, we're using fertilized, a ball of cells that forms early in a pregnancy about 5 to 6 days after a sperm fertilizes an egg.
A zygote.
It implants in your uterine wall, eventually becoming the embryo and then the fetus. Like, can you look up child sacrifice throughout history? According to Roman and Greek sources, Phoenicians and Carthaginians sacrificed infants to their gods. The bones of numerous infants have been... Oh, yeah, the child sacrifice Wikipedia. I'm glad I'm not... Like, everything we're Googling is going to probably get CPS at your house, Josh. Will you click on child sacrifice, please? I'm glad it's not my computer.
What is this, Moloch?
Child sacrifice is the ritualistic killing of children in order to please or appease a deity, supernatural beings, or sacred social order. As such, it is a form of human sacrifice. Child sacrifice is thought to be an extreme extension of the idea that the more important the object of sacrifice, the more devout the person rendering it. I mean, you know what they say? Well, it was Mark Twain says, history doesn't repeat, but sometimes it echoes.
Mm-hmm.
That there is something so fucking weird about the fact that they are using zygotes. They're growing zygotes into neural tissue, and then they're plugging that shit into a computer to do stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the implications of that are really crazy.
Yeah, I'm going to buy AI baby is what I'm going to buy.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Is like, man, as soon as that app comes out, I'm buying it. AI baby.
Yep.
That's super fucking cool. And then maybe you could like see I don't want to just see the AI baby. Like, I want to see the Petri dish organoid too. So you could actually see how it's doing. With all the wires coming. Can you pull up organoid? Let's take a look at that. I know we're going over the time I wanted to do, but damn, I just stumbled upon something that's like really fucking weird. I want to see it. I know it doesn't look like that. Like, what does it look like? Organoid and Petri dish.
Is it this?
There's got to be a picture of it. Is it microscopic? What does it look like? It doesn't look like that. No!
It looks like these little brains.
Dude, click on that. It looks like brains. It looks like tiny brains. Are you fucking kidding me? Wait. Oh, my God. It's got little eyes. Click right there.
This one?
Oh, fuck. It seems they grew eyes! It grew eyes! Dude! We are now taking zygotes, plugging them into a growing eyeballs out of those poor little cuties and then making them play the most boring-ass video game of all time forever. Why aren't people talking about this? Like, that is so fucking dark. How big can you grow them? Like, do you need to stop with a petri dish? Can you get them full size? I mean, look, I get, like, let's use the zygote to grow a heart. Let's use the zygote to, like, save a life. But fuck, to grow the zygote into a brain that plays video games? There are potentially as many types of Wow. Well, hail Satan, we live in the age...
Shit.
I don't know when this is going to come out, but I hope you guys have a wonderful Thanksgiving. There's so much to be thankful for right now. And I don't know. I'm kind of speechless. It's going to take some time for me to think about what I easily could have figured out when I started reading about this, but I just didn't want to look it up where they're getting the brain tissue from. Hi, it's the next day. And after I recorded the solo episode, I was really freaked out because I didn't want to live in a kind of world where artificial intelligence and potentially like war drones were somehow being controlled by brains grown from blastocysts, which would have really freaked me the fuck out. As it turns out, thank God, they figured out a way to grow these brains, not from blastocysts. And P.S., the blastocysts don't come from the termination of pregnancies, which would also make it even more sinister, but in fact come from IVF. And if they are used, which is rarely because of obvious ethical reasons, there's a lot of like regulation, like intense regulation around this. So I just didn't want to freak you guys out and think that this is like the way I just from a quick Google search was putting the pieces together. So I wanted to say that was wrong. Totally, absolutely wrong. Now, have they grown brain organoids from human fetal cells? Yes, they have. It's what they used to do. But they figured out how to grow it just from like, I don't know, pluripotent stem cells, which I think you can just get them from your fucking arm, which is crazy. The implications of that you could maybe grow a little brain out of your arm if you knew how to send the right signals. Again, not a scientist. I doubt it's that easy. But, if you're interested in growing your own brain organoid, I thought I'd show you something. Josh, could you just quickly Google search grow your own brain organoid? I was amazed to find that you could actually buy kits where you can grow little brains. Now, I don't know how that works, and I don't know if you have to find the stem cells, but I'd love for some of y'all to try to grow your own little brains for me. Josh is going to pull it up real quick. Be incredible. I mean, again, like this was me like just going through the internet. Look, I wanted to be debunked here. I texted my smartest friends and was like, please debunk. Most of them are like, are you fucking high? What are you talking about? None of them knew. Then I had a nice conversation with ChatGPT about it. Then I got worried like, oh, is it censoring itself? Is this a secret? You know, the conspiracy part of my brain? And as it turns out, no. They're not doing that. It would just be too controversial.
What was it called again? A what?
Grow your own brain organoid. .com. That's not it. We should start that. Grow your own brain organoid with your kids. It's like a little project. Google brain organoid kit. I'm telling you people, I found this. A lot of the research in this regard is being done by Johns Hopkins. And they are not using fucking blastocysts. Not human ones anyway. Anyway, look, you guys can find it on your own. It's out there. If you want to... No, it's a kit. You buy it. It's like, it looks cool too. It comes with all these different colored fluids and beakers and shit. And you could just grow a brain now. That's the world we're in right now. You want to grow a brain? You can grow a brain. A tiny little brain.
There we go.
There it is. Can you pull that all the way up? Look at that. StemDF Cerebral Organoid Kit. How much is it?
$439.
It's only $439 to grow a little mini brain. I don't know what you're going to do with it after you grow it, but I mean, fucking cool for next Halloween. Give out little brains. Does it come with the stem cells? Because I didn't see that. It seems like...
What's included? Cerebral organoid basal medium, 1,100 milliliters.
What else?
It's all these supplements, organoid supplement.
But no stem cells. So yeah, that's bullshit. So they just send you like the goop to grow the brain, but they don't send you the stem cells. You got to get that yourself. Can you just quickly Google order pluripotent? How do I order? Just order stem cells? Can you just order stem cells? What kind of fucking world are we in right now? Could you, if you could grow your own little brains, could you cook with them? Like, are you a cannibal if you grow your own human tissue?
I would say so. There's an animal-free sample request that you can get.
Animal-free. Benefits of Accelerate GMP Expansion Medium Animal-Free Sample Request. What?
Advance your stem cell therapy program into the clinic more easily with our new GMP grade of iPSC expansion medium.
Don't know what that is. Well, if you guys know where I could order some stem cells so I could grow some brains with my kids, I'd appreciate it. You can leave it in the comments down below. Sorry if I freaked you out earlier. We do not live in that world. We are not in some hell realm where they are plugging brains grown from blastocysts into AI. Thank you, Jesus. Bye. Colleges and debates.